Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. And I'm Katie Givens. I'm still not a lawyer.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
It's October.
I can't believe it.
Oh,
you're
wow.
So excited, though, because that means Halloween. I'm sure you've already got shit everywhere in your house.
Already. I'm ready.
I'm going to come over and just take photographs because people won't believe it if they haven't seen it.
No, you should. It on... You're going, you need, you come over for the Halloween party.
Yeah, sure.
And take all the photos you want.
Do I have to dress up?
Just not of me. Yeah. No, you don't have to dress up.
Can I just dress as a mediocre journalist?
You can.
So that's what I'm wearing now.
Yeah, with your sport coat.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Hey,
let's also talk about the shirt you have on.
Mm-hmm.
His shirt is an Easy Street shirt.
Yeah, it's my one of my favorite shirts.
And it's a great shirt.
Yeah, it's
and
very comfy.
I don't know if our listeners know this, but our main sponsor, Easy Street.
Dead giveaway in
they,
the title.
Yeah, they have a whole wall of shirts you can purchase.
Oh, yeah.
When you come to have dinner or lunch or, or come to hear a good band, whatever you're going to do there.
Yep, you could come and play in our Saturday paper football tournaments.
Oh, that's
that we
fun.
Started
oh,
last
yeah,
week. John Holder was the big
fun.
Winner yesterday.
Uh-oh.
$80.
Hey, that's yeah. fun.
So,
well,
and that was our first time. So hopefully we will have
it'll
even
get bigger
more
and bigger.
Contestants
yeah.
or players, participants in the weeks ahead. So
mm-hmm.
Saturday, 2 o'clock.
So show up, buy a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Have some lunch.
You don't have to.
And play. Yeah, I think you should.
You should.
You should.
But it's not a requirement to play paper football.
I have... 3 different styles of Easy Street t-shirts.
You never wear them. I never see you.
I wear them. I just don't wear them to record.
They are printed locally.
That's right. At Model T's Screen Printing and Custom Embroidery, 100 East Main Street in Center, Alabama. They're not a sponsor.
And you know what?
But they could be.
They could be. Yeah. And the Chamber would be so proud of us that we're promoting Shop yeah. Local.
They
the
are
chamber.
A sponsor.
They are a sponsor.
Yes, we are getting into the holiday season. It'll be here before we know it.
I know. We're just checking all kind of boxes.
Yeah, probably time for us to reach out to Joy and Leanne and see if they want to update their
mm-hmm.
commercial.
Happy holidays from the chamber.
The Shop Local.
Yeah, it is Shop Local. Yeah. We know what it'll be. We just have to put it together.
Right.
It's not time for staycation anymore. It's time to shop.
Can
local.
We just run the one from last year?
No, we're not that lazy.
Oh, okay.
Are we?
I guess
Scott?
Not.
No.
I was.
No, we're fine. Not doing that.
Whatever.
We don't do that to our sponsors.
I want to do, Katie, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't even know y'all were starting the paper football this week, but we wouldn't.
Well, we weren't. And Daniel Johnson texted me at 11:30, 12 o'clock and said, hey, are we doing it today? And I said, no, Shane and I talked yesterday. We're going to move it one more week down the road. He said, I've already recruited like 5 or 6 people to come and play today. So I showed up at 2. Daniel was here with 5 or 6 people and we ended up with 8 and had a good time.
Because we were at the county volleyball tournament.
How'd that go?
Well, Cherokee County won. So
yay!
The Ellison and them won. Yeah. Okay. Well, not of course. They hadn't won one since 2013. So it was a big deal.
That's, I had no doubt that they would win. They're such a great team.
Did Ellison get a single serve returned?
Yes.
That's a rare thing.
This was a hard fought win.
Because
but
she
yeah.
set the state record for unreturned aces. For aces service in volleyball.
I don't know who held that before her, what school or anything. But
no, they said in the little blurb they wrote up about her, but I didn't even know the schools or recognize the names.
You know, there was a young girl in Cherokee County High School back in the late 90s who played volleyball.
I see where this is going.
And she served 1 game of aces.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Is she in the room today?
She's in the room today.
Katie, was it you?
But she did not. But she did not hold the state record. So
yeah.
But it would have been cool.
Was it still 15? Was it? Did they play Rally Point when you played?
No. It was the old timey boring volleyball way they played.
Casey West was telling me she served a perfect game in her day too. But it was the old.
Yeah. Points. Now, I mean, it was not like underhand serving. I mean,
we did
overhead jump serves, stuff like that. But
there was just less points to play for.
It was not Rally Point. I would love to play the game the way it's played today. I would love to.
Boy, they were sweaty and wore out.
Well, and Ellison,
after all day, I'm sure.
Ellison Givens is our major athlete. We're so proud of her and her team.
Yeah.
So congratulations and way to go on that state record.
Yes, we are proud of her. She's a mess.
She's great. I played pickleball with her this summer.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Did you lose?
We didn't. Katie and I were a
Okay.
We were a good team.
I look over.
Yeah, no, we beat Ellison and Shane. They were not.
We did.
Oh, well, you didn't say it. Shane, bless her heart, if she's playing with her dad.
It's so funny to watch them play. Yeah. It's so funny to watch them play together. It's entertaining. Anyways, congratulations to Cherokee County Lady Warrior Volleyball team. All right, what else?
I've got a shout out.
All right.
So do you guys remember maybe a couple of months ago when I talked about the couple from Australia that I saw in Easy Street that was driving across the country?
Yes.
And I told them about our ghost train. So anyway, she reached out to us on Facebook just a couple of days ago and sent me a link. Her name is Kay Gall, G-A-L-L.
Okay.
And she said, hey, just wanted to see if you remembered me. And then she sent me a clip of a double murder that took place somewhere in Australia on a street called Easy Street.
We got to do it.
Sure. I said, it's on the list.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Kay.
Shout out to Kay.
Yes.
And I've got a couple more, but we will get to them in time.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
They're in your notes. Can't do anything about it.
Yeah, they're my notes. Stop looking over my shoulder, guys.
I'm fine with it. It's okay.
All right.
You are in the big chair today, Scott. Mm-hmm. And you,
as it were.
You sent us a text this week that you were so sick of this case.
Yeah. But I always am.
Yeah, you're like, I'm so sick of this. What an ass hat.
Yeah.
Talking about our killer.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm always that way because I overdo it. Mm. I read a couple of or three books. I get on the Wikipedia page. I watch all the documentaries I can find. Mm-hmm. And holy shitballs, if you think there aren't a lot of documentaries about Jack the Ripper, you are mistaken.
Well, that doesn't sound mediocre at all, Scott.
Well, I don't know. Let me know in an hour what you think.
Okay. So a lot of folks have done this topic. Jack the Ripper is...
Many times.
...has been done to death. Mm-hmm. But...
No pun intended.
Yeah, right. But... I was so excited when you wanted to do this topic.
And yeah, me too, but that was a month ago.
Yeah, so here we are. I said, let's put it in our October lineup because it's spooky season and, you know, you think about Jack the Ripper and it happened so long ago. It's one of those things that we're so far removed from it that it's become lore and spooky Halloween season type stuff.
That's right.
But these are real people who... were brutally murdered, and I'm excited about the refresher in my history lesson.
And Katie,
today,
you said that you're not very familiar with it at all, right?
No, it's just not one of the...
Well, you can't... Yeah. Everybody can't read about everything.
Correct.
So this is for me.
Yay, for Katie today.
So let's do it.
All right. So you're here, you're out there, you're listening. You already know the title of today's episode because you read the description. But I'm going to tell you again anyway. Just to make sure we're all on the same page before we walk down these seedy, dingy, dark, and dangerous cobblestone streets. The Whitechapel murder. The East End killer. And most prominently, of course, Jack the Ripper. That's our subject today. And I'm not going to tell you that we're going to do a fantastic job of telling you this story today, but this is a fantastic true crime story, and that's why you're listening, because you like true crime. Actually, Katie and Kelly, you guys don't have any option. You can't pause this story like everybody out there listening now can.
We're so stuck.
You're stuck here for the next hour
or so. We're stuck on these stinky cobblestone streets with you.
And I'm going to tell you right now, if you're out there listening and you're having lunch, prepare to put your sandwich down. And if you don't take my advice when I tell you to do that, when you're eating your lunch, you're going to stop chewing anyway.
Mm-hmm. You've been warned.
Yes. And maybe you're out there listening and you think, golly, this sounds like a true crime that the team of experts at True Crime on Easy Street could just skip right over. What could we possibly add to this list of known unknowns about possibly the most famous unsolved string of serial killings in history? The short answer is not much. So if you're something of a ripperologist, and if you don't know that term, it means somebody who is nuts about Jack the Ripper, soaks in all they can. If you're one of those folks and you think we're going to hit you with a revelation today, think again, move along.
Or not. Keep listening.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's not what we do here, though.
Thanks, God.
I mean, those guys are nuts about
well,
this
I would
case.
Say I would ask them to listen to it and then give us some feedback sure. on how we did as the 101 yeah. version.
Yeah, kind of like with your who was the guy who jumped out of the airplane?
D.B. Cooper. Yeah, we got a lot of positive feedback from D.B. Cooper fans
yeah.
because they said we did a good job of laying it out for the first time to people yep. who aren't familiar. So, Katie, you will be the judge of how well I do today since this is new to you.
Yeah, so don't sell yourself short, Scott.
Yeah.
Fine. I'll let somebody else do it. This is going to be the 101 version. That's what we do here. We're going to speak generally today. That's how we always speak here. And I thought I knew the story fairly well going in. It turns out, complete idiot. When it came to the specifics of this case. And I hesitate here to point that same finger of ignorance at everybody who's out there listening to the sound of our voices right now. But if you are still listening, you may as well stick around so that you won't be as much of a Jack the Ripper dip as I turned out to be in an hour's time. Maybe you won't be a Ripper Dipper. First eye roll from Katie, and we're not 10 minutes into the show. Mm-hmm. We're all going to learn something today about the Whitechapel murders, and that's one of the many names for this case, for the five murders, the five canonical Jack the Ripper killings. Canonical meaning generally accepted to all be part of the same story. So you're going to hear me say that word a few times today. About these crimes that took place on these seedy, dingy, dark, and dangerous cobblestone streets in East London. The neighborhood was called Whitechapel. Before we get finished today, we're going to drop you right down out of the sky, like on Google Maps, onto these seedy, dingy, dark, dangerous cobblestone streets, London, England, 1888. You're going to see the shadowy corners created by the hissing gas lamps that lit the streets that bordered Mitre Square, which is where one of our victims was found. You're going to hear the scrapes of the boots as the butchers and the bakers and the fishmongers and the unfortunates scramble across the cobblestones of Buck's Row, where another victim turned up. What exactly is an unfortunate? That was the polite term in Victorian England at the time for prostitutes.
Oh, really?
It was. We're going to hold your hand for the next hour as we dodge horse-drawn carriages and leap over piles of steaming, stinking horse dung that they left in their wake as we watch out for coachmen dodging up and down the darkened streets of Dorset Street, for example. And that's where the Ripper's fifth and final victim was found, her face missing and her body flayed wide open from her neck to her knees. But before we tell you about Mary Kelly and her other unfortunate friends, I feel like I've used this metaphor before. Let's fire up the DeLorean. Get up to 1.21 gigawatts on the flux capacitor and accelerate to 88 miles per hour. Travel back in time to London, England in the year 1888. Have I done that before? It feels like I have.
Is this the appropriate time for me to say I've never seen that movie?
Fuck. No, there's never an appropriate time to say you've never seen Back to the Future.
I do get the reference.
Okay. I'll take what I can get. I thought she was going to eye roll when I said that. Turns out I'm the one doing the eye rolling. Mm-hmm. Okay. But first, before we do that, here's where she eye rolls. Let's set the table. See, there it is. In January of 1888, a brand new daily newspaper was founded in London. What we today would call a tabloid, like the Weekly World News that your grandmother used to buy at the grocery store checkout aisle. The one with headlines about boy vampires and women impregnated by space aliens. That kind of tabloid. The Star, it was called in London. It was. It was founded early in 1888, like I said, and its writers and editors were looking for something, anything, outlandish, ridiculous, headline-grabbing to increase their paid circulation. Anything at all. And there were reporters and editors who were willing to go to just about any length to make sure that that happened. And it worked. By the height of the fright over Jack the Ripper, over 1 million London residents were reading the city's newspapers every week. Continuing with our setting of the table. In case anyone is curious about how sophisticated I am not, On June the 3rd, 1888, my favorite poem of all time, Ernest Lawrence Thayer's Homage to Baseball, Casey at the Bat, was printed for the first time in the San Francisco Examiner. The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. All right, I'm not going to do the whole thing, but I could. Continuing on again. On August the 1st of 1888, a German automotive engineer named Carl Friedrich Benz was issued the world's very first ever driver's license by the state where he lived in Germany. A few decades later, in 1926, Benz teamed up with a guy from Australia named Emil Mercedes, and we all know how that turned out.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Nick Saban starts selling their vehicles.
That's right. And he's not a sponsor, but he could be if you're out there listening, coach. 30 days after Benz got his driver's license, this on August the 31st, 1888, the first of our five canonical murder victims by the person who came to be known as Jack the Ripper was found.
And Scott, do you know who coined the term Jack the Ripper?
Yes, I do.
You're going to cover that?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Yeah, it's part of the story.
All right.
So I'm going to drop these dates of the murders into the timeline as we go along and set the table, but I'm going to come back, obviously, and talk about them a little more. 4 days after victim number one was discovered in America, George Eastman registered the trademark Kodak and received a patent for his brand new camera, which used rolls of film. Katie, Kelly, and I will explain to you later what it was like to use a camera with a roll of film inside it. There's that eye roll.
Thank you. That was a big one. Big eye roll.
Yes. September the 8th, 1888, the second victim of Jack the Ripper was discovered. 3 weeks later, on September the 27th, a letter purported to be written by a man who signed the letter, Jack the Ripper, was received by London's Central News Agency. Whether or not we believe in that letter's authenticity, and most Ripperologists do not, its words promised more dead prostitutes and was signed simply Jack the Ripper.
So whoever did this, what they believe to be a hoax letter, coined this name.
That's right.
Okay.
In a few minutes, we're going to delve a little deeper into why most people believe that that letter was a forgery, possibly perpetrated by the press. Remember, the guys at the Star were willing to do just about anything to increase their circulation. And there's a theory about why at one point, well, hang on, let me go back. It's 3 days later, on September the 30th of 1888, 3 days after that letter was received, that Whitechapel murder victims number 3 and 4 were found within an hour of each other, about a mile apart, their brutalized bodies scattered about on the streets of Whitechapel. And there's a theory about why Jack the Ripper struck twice that night, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
Back to setting the table. On October the 14th, 1888, the first ever motion picture film was created in Leeds, England, by a French artist and inventor named Louis Le Prince. The film was 18 frames long, lasted about 2 seconds, and I've watched it on Google, and it's black and white, of course. It's an image of four people dancing around in circles in a garden. If you want to watch it for yourself, Google Round Hay Garden Scene.
It's my birthday.
And happy birthday. Nice anniversary. 3 weeks later, on November the 9th, 1888, the fifth and final canonical victim of Jack the Ripper was discovered in her tiny one-room apartment, again, in the Whitechapel area of London. Now, there were several more murdered prostitutes after this fifth victim, but the police considered them to be copycat killings. As far as the police were concerned, and we'll explain why, Jack the Ripper stopped after that. And to conclude the setting of the table today, in one final act of mutilation in the year 1888, on December the 23rd, Dutch painter Vincent van Gogh, suffering from mental health issues, obviously, lopped off the bottom of his left ear. So you guys have heard me say Whitechapel many times already.
I just want to say, I'm sorry, chasing a squirrel here, but you said Van Gogh. Mm-hmm. There is a lovely song that is dedicated to him. It's called Vincent. It's by the same guy who did American Pie. The
Don
song.
McLean.
Yeah. It is... It makes me cry every time.
American Pie makes me cry every time.
Not American Pie. The song Vincent that he did.
I know, but I'm just saying his other song makes me cry.
About Vincent Van Gogh. I've never heard it. everybody's homework is to listen to that. All right. Lovely. KT is the one who told me about that song. He knew that song. Oh. And
he's the most discompassionate person I've ever met in my life.
Oh. He's a giant teddy bear. Beautiful song. Check it out.
All right, cool. Okay, so you guys have heard me talk about Whitechapel already a lot of times today, and we haven't even gotten to the bad parts.
Right.
We're getting warmer, but before we get to the blood and the gore, let's talk a little bit about the neighborhood where Jack the Ripper stalked his victims in the late summer and early fall of 1888, Whitechapel. In the mid-19th century, largely due to the famous potato famine in the 1840s and 50s, England experienced an alarming influx of Irish immigrants. Also from 1882 onward, Jewish refugees fleeing persecution in Eastern Europe flocked to England by the millions. And a lot of them, especially if they went to London, ended up pushed into the area of Whitechapel, which 40 years, 50 years before had been a very upscale neighborhood. But when all of these immigrants came in, a lot of the area was parks and squares, and people started to build little shanty towns in these parks and squares, and that's where all of the poor people ended up. The poor end of the city was Whitechapel by the 1880s.
Well, and this is an island we're talking about. Mm-hmm. They can't really expand.
Yeah, that's right.
The city or the way, well, so they had to figure out something to handle all the people.
Like, Lower Manhattan, you have to go up. Mm-hmm. So they went up. Mm-hmm. Predictably, the parish of Whitechapel became increasingly overcrowded. There was a population of 80,000 people within 1 square mile. Ooh. In 1888. Working conditions, housing conditions, deplorable. Significant economic underclass was developing. 55% of the children born in the Whitechapel area in the 1880s did not live to be 5 years old. Mm. Robbery, violence, alcohol dependency, all commonplace. And the endemic poverty, of course, drove many women to the only way they could survive, prostitution. In 1888, the London police estimated that there were 62 brothels and 1,200 women working as prostitutes in Whitechapel, with approximately 8,500 people living in those cramped and all too common shanty houses in Whitechapel. The cost of a tiny bed in one of these so-called doss houses was 4 pence, which is only a few dollars today, which tells you how poor this place was. The economic problems in Whitechapel were accompanied by a steady rise in social tensions due to all of these migrants, right? Anti-Semitism, crime, racism, social disturbances were everyday occurrences in Whitechapel. Now, to the city's well-to-do, Whitechapel was considered a notorious den of immorality. Such perceptions were strengthened in the summer months of 1888 when this series of vicious murders began to occur. Attributed to an unknown assailant who came to be known as Jack the Ripper, and it was the print media that had a lot to do with that. So let's get this out of the way. Let's talk about the media just for a minute. In London in the 1880s, the popular newspaper press of the day was practicing a style of reporting that was known in England as new journalism. Here at the time, we called it yellow journalism. Think of William Randolph Hearst, Joseph Pulitzer, fighting it out for readership in New York City. That was the same thing. Some of the common characteristics of English new journalism included sensationalized headlines meant to frighten people, exaggerated facts, fake interviews, unnamed sources, just plain false information. And all of it
sounds familiar.
Presented as objective truth. Sadly, mm-hmm. that form of journalism survives today, depending on which cable news channel you're watching.
Or all of them.
Or social media
or that
outlet you're on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Jack the Ripper was the first ever true crime media sensation in the history of the world. And remember that the Star newspaper was brand new and looking to establish itself. And remember, too, that public executions weren't very far in the rearview mirror in England in the 1880s. And I think maybe the general public's gore factor was higher then than it's been since, until maybe recently, with social media, like you said, so prevalent, and everybody fighting for attention and eyeballs and clicks.
Now you're saying they weren't still publicly executing people, but it hadn't been that long.
That's
since
right.
They'd stopped.
If you were an adult, you remember going to see it as a kid.
Right.
Okay, so they're completely desensitized to things like that. When you see, when that's a
Nothing is too outlandish.
Right. When that's done in the public square, it's really hard to shock
people.
But I also say, I can't imagine how terrifying it was for the residents to live in this area. And you wake up and there might be a body or there might be two there. And then the newspaper's sensationalizing everything. So the fear mongering is high. But but they also have a reason to be afraid.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So you've got both things working. It's just terror, living in utter terror. And if you're poor, you are even more terrified because you don't have
because
the means to have more security or protection.
And add to that, to everything else, it doesn't appear that theft is the motive here. No. So you're not safe just because you're poor.
Right.
You know, throw that on top of everything.
Exactly.
Else. Now, here's something a lot of people don't know about Whitechapel. In 1886, zero murders in Whitechapel. 1887, zero.
Wow.
1889, one. 1890, one. 1888 was the year when...
By Jack.
Everything...
Both by Jack.
Well, not maybe. Just by Jack, according to the police anyway.
Oh, okay.
There were 11 murders in Whitechapel in 1888. Jack only gets credit for five.
And Jack did five. Or they think Jack did five.
So when this frenzy of fatalities began occurring in 1888... The press took the story and ran with it. The sordid journalistic mantra of the day quickly became, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm. Please consider this another public service announcement, ladies and listeners. If you're eating as you listen to this, if you have your lunch in your hand right now, chew quickly. The time has come for this podcast.
Hit pause and finish. Come
to
back.
Get to the blood and guts of this story, literally. And we will do that right after these words from our sponsors. Kelly and Katie, let me tell you guys a quick story. Recently, while I was dining at Easy Street, I met a man from Georgia who told me that he and his wife were visiting the Weiss Lake area, planning to relocate here permanently when he retires soon. I told him the first thing that came to my mind, call Greg Oliver at Go Realty. The number is 256-504-3847. Greg is the owner and the broker at Go Realty right here in Cherokee County. If you're thinking of moving here or anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, if you're looking for property anywhere in the area, call Greg. He has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he's ready to help you find exactly what you're looking for. He's got 25 years of experience in the real estate market. Go again and look at that complete list that he currently has for offer. That's Greg Oliver, Weisslake.com. So visit the website or call Greg Oliver at...
What's that number again?
Thanks, guys. 256-504-3847.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about one of our newest sponsors, and that is Cherokee Family Healthcare. Cherokee Family Healthcare is located right here on Main Street in Center Alabama.
Connie Geimer, who is a nurse practitioner there, is an acute emergency and family specialist, along with Piper Pierce, who's a family and psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. They offer many services at Cherokee Family Healthcare, such as...
They have primary care, mental health, urgent care, can get DOT physicals. They handle weight loss, IV hydration. We all need that from time to time. You can get a same-day appointment, and walk-ins are welcome.
Yeah, so give them a call
at 256-266-1021. And as we move into our holiday season, the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce wants to remind everyone to shop local.
Cherokee County has some lovely shops that you can patron throughout the holiday season, get any kind of gifts that you need. Scott, what kind of gifts do you need?
I don't really need anything, but there are plenty of things that I want, and you can get a lot of those things right here in Cherokee County. You can get a great meal at one of the many restaurants that is a member of the Chamber of Commerce. It's as simple as filling up your gas tank at a local station before you go out of town to do some shopping, if you have to leave town, but we hope you don't. Stay right here in Cherokee County.
Oh, yeah. And my gift that I want you to get me, Scott, you can definitely buy local. So I'll let you know about that later.
Well, you're going to ruin the surprise.
So we want to challenge all of you to make sure to do as much shopping as you can this holiday season right here in Cherokee County.
And if you need more information, visit cherokee-chamber.org.
Guys, we want to let you know that don't forget that Easy Street is now open for lunch 5 days a week, Tuesday through Saturday at 11.
Great lunch menu.
Let's do lunch.
Brand new. We've shared it on our Facebook page, and I know that Shane has also shared it on the Easy Street Facebook page, so it's easy to find the menu, and it's terrific. Everything on it.
Yes. What's your favorite thing, Scott?
I like the hamburger steak with the mashed potatoes. The mashed potatoes are better than I can make. And I make pretty darn good mashed potatoes.
No, they are.
They're terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, so what's your favorite? Yeah.
I like, well, you can get a flatbread pizza. Mm-hmm. I also like just the chicken fingers.
Yeah, chicken fingers are great. Best chicken fingers in town. How about you, Kelly?
I like the rice bowl with the chicken and the
yeah.
vegetables.
It's all
the
good.
Yum yum sauce.
Ooh.
So delicious. You're not going to go wrong. Salad bar's always fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Have lunch at Easy Street. You might see us there one day.
Yeah, you never know. 11 to 2 every day is when the menu prices on the lunch menu are.
That sounds right.
That's right. Something like that. Everything that comes out of that swinging door is delicious at Easy Street, we promise.
Yes. Thank you to Easy Street for being our primary sponsor, our main sponsor.
Yeah. Thanks, Shane. Go eat lunch.
Yes.
Yes.
Come see us. Thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors. Okay, Scott, where are we going?
So the killings of prostitutes, unfortunates, remember they were called, began in Whitechapel in 1888, months before any of the victims were eventually attributed to Jack the Ripper, at least according to the vast majority of Ripperologists. Now, you will on occasion come across an argument from a devoted follower of this case who believes that either one or both of the murders that I'm about to tell you about were committed by a, as yet, inexperienced Jack the Ripper, who was still trying to figure out how he wanted to kill people.
Sort of like a disorganized
yeah.
killer.
Yeah, remember we talked about the Zodiac Killer? You know, several different methods along the pathway in that story, if you believe one guy committed all of those crimes.
Well, and they're it's almost like they're perfecting their craft.
Yeah, exactly. So why prostitutes? We've already talked about it, but they were easier to find. They perhaps wouldn't be missed by anyone for a couple of days if they suddenly turned up missing. Maybe somebody just hated prostitutes for some reason. Maybe his mother had been one, or he'd been the victim of theft at the hand of a prostitute, or maybe his wife turned to prostitution and he decided to take it out on all of them. All of those are theories.
Sure.
About why Jack did what he did. And if it there's another thing. Most of these prostitutes were alcoholics. And if that sounds like an overgeneralization about their lives, it certainly is. And I've read enough about these women to know that their lives were a lot more complicated than simply being alcoholic prostitutes. Now, the canonical five varied in age from 25 to 47, and all of them had their lives fall apart. The older ladies had been married and had had children and husbands. And for whatever reason, their families broke apart and they devolved into drinking. Or maybe it was the other way around in a few of those cases. Either way, their lives had been split apart and they were left to fend for themselves on the streets. And that meant prostitution. And that was how all of them met their end. They ran into the wrong guy on the wrong street corner on the wrong night in the wrong neighborhood in London in 1888. Now, the first of these prostitutes to die in Whitechapel in 1888 by someone else's hand. Her name was Emma Smith. That was on April the 3rd. She was sexually assaulted with a blunt object and died the following day of peritonitis.
Ugh.
Before she died, she told the police that she had been attacked by three men.
Oh.
The second murdered prostitute was August the 7th. Her name was Martha Tabram. She had been stabbed 39 times. The savagery of her murder, the lack of an obvious motive, and the closeness of the location and date to the later canonical Ripper murders led the police initially to link Martha Tabram's murder to Jack the Ripper. Most Ripperologists today will tell you she was not.
Oh,
but some will. Some still believe that she was victim number one. So she would make the first of six if you subscribe to that chapter, or that line of reasoning. However, this murder differed from the later canonical murders because although Tabram had been stabbed many times, she had not suffered any slash wounds to her throat or abdomen or genitals. That debate over whether or not either or both of these two women were among Jack's victims continued. Generally, I think, like I said, most Ripperologists say no. The common markers in the murders committed by Jack himself, according to most experts, consisted of deep slashing wounds to the throat, extensive abdominal and genital area desecration, the removal of internal organs, and progressively intense facial mutilation. Neither Emma Smith nor Martha Tabram showed signs of any of these types of injuries. All right, guys, so here we are. Sticking with those generally agreed upon parameters of methodology attributed specifically to Jack the Ripper, we arrive at canonical victim number one on August the 31st, 1888. Known as Polly to her friends and fellow prostitutes, which apparently were pretty much the exact same small group of people at the time. The body of Mary Ann Nichols, age 43, was found at 3:40 a.m. in a dark, narrow, cobbled street called Bucks Row in Whitechapel. Today, Bucks Row is known as Durward Street, in case someone out there is planning to visit London and walk the crime scenes. Mm. Polly's throat had been obliterated by two deep cuts, one of which completely severed all the tissue down to the vertebrae.
Oh, my God.
There were bruises found around her neck and throat, which suggested that she may have been strangled before she had her throat cut, which would explain why no one heard her scream.
This is so brutal. This is another level of...
That's that anger level that some ripperologists think it must have been the motivation was just genuine hatred for prostitutes for whatever reason.
Well, and you think about how personal. You're so close to somebody when you strangle them. You're just proximity.
Oh, yeah. Very personal.
And then when you're... literally cutting someone's head off.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Or maybe just a hatred of women and prostitutes are an easy
maybe so.
Target.
Easy
sure.
target.
Absolutely.
No one's looking for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Yeah. Polly's genital area had been stabbed twice and the lower section of her abdomen had been partly ripped open by a deep jagged wound which caused her bowels to protrude. The last person to see Polly alive at around 2 a.m., one of her fellow prostitutes, said Polly told her when they passed on the street that she was headed out to work to try and earn the 4 pence she needed to get a bed at a nearby Doss house for the night.
Ugh.
Now, there's a lot more information that is available on Wikipedia and other websites about the five canonical victims and their family histories and how they all ended up where they were working as prostitutes in the worst part of town. So if you're interested, it's out there. Just write down their names. You can Google them, and there's a lot more information about the victims. We could have done an hour about every one of these five murders.
Oh, sure.
Made them just all last for that long.
Yeah.
But that's not what we do here. 1 week later, on September the 8th, 1888, the body of Jack's second victim, 47-year-old Annie Chapman, was discovered around sunrise lying near the steps to the doorway of the backyard at 29 Hanbury Street. As in the case of Nichols, Annie's throat was severed by two deep cuts. Her abdomen had been cut entirely open, with a section of the flesh from her stomach placed on her left shoulder and her small intestines placed on her right shoulder. Chapman's autopsy revealed that her uterus and sections of her bladder and genitals had been removed.
And they never found them?
I guess not. They weren't there.
Oh my gosh.
Now he's just playing with
it. Yeah. I told you guys, blood and guts, and it's only going to get worse.
Mm.
A witness later told police that she had seen Chapman standing outside 29 Hanbury Street around 5:30 a.m., talking to a dark-haired man in a dark overcoat and a deer stalker hat. You know, like Sherlock Holmes wears, with the ear flaps.
Mm-hmm.
Not very stylish, but apparently that was the big thing in 1888 in England.
It might have been like pretty functional too.
I guess
it gets cold there.
Sure. Keeps the wind out of your ear holes.
Yeah.
The witness allegedly heard Annie ask the man, "Will you?" To which she replied, "Yes." And as it turned out, Annie Chapman should have said no.
Mm.
And now we come to Jack's third and fourth victims, what ripperologists refer to as the double event, because they were both killed in the early morning hours of Sunday, September the 30th, 3 weeks after Annie Chapman. 3 days after the very first Jack the Ripper letter was received at the Central News Agency. So 3 days before these murders happened, the Central News Agency in London got the letter that was signed Jack the Ripper. But they didn't tell anybody about it. They kept it quiet.
Okay.
But in the letter, Jack says he's going to kill some more people.
Hmm.
And 3 days later, victim number three turns up. Her name was Elizabeth Stride. She was 44 years old, a prostitute. Discovered around 1 a.m. just off Burner Street. Elizabeth had been killed by a 6-inch long slice across the front of her neck, which severed her trachea and her left carotid artery. Mm. There were no further mutilations to her body, however, which explains perhaps why Jack struck again that night. The consensus among reptilologists is that Jack was interrupted by the sounds of a policeman turning the corner or a horse-drawn buggy approaching, and he had to get away.
He didn't satisfy the urge.
Exactly. Yeah. Some other theories include the possibility that because the wound was so simple and the knife wound was a little bit different from the others, and the crime occurred a little bit earlier in the evening than usual, that Elizabeth Stride was not one of Jack's victims. That theory's out there. But we're going to hop right over that rabbit hole. But if Jack being interrupted is an accurate assessment of the reason for the relatively composed condition of Etta, of Elizabeth's body, then Jack certainly took out his frustrations on Catherine Eddowes. Mm. Catherine was 46 years old on the night that she stumbled, probably drunkenly, into the path of Jack the Ripper. However she got there, Kate Eddowes, as she was known, took her final steps near the darkest corner of already dimly lit Mitre Square. Remember the gas lights hissing and no other sounds.
Mm. That's so creepy.
Kate's body was found within about 45 minutes of the discovery of Elizabeth Stride's body. And if you haven't taken my advice about stopping your lunch yet, this is your last warning. Mm. Kate's throat had been severed from ear to ear. Her abdomen had been ripped open by a single long, deep, jagged wound. Her intestines had been placed above her right shoulder, one section of which had been completely detached and placed between her body and her left arm. Obviously the most frenzied attack so far. Underlined so far. Now there's one London police officer who's written extensively about this case through the years. He believes that the body parts that were missing from the victims weren't taken by Jack the Ripper. He thinks that there was a conspiracy going on in the morgue. Medical research at the time called for body parts, and they were hard to come by. And what you will read in the autopsy reports about these cases is that the body parts were expertly removed, which led to many of the theories about who Jack the Ripper might have been. This guy says, I don't think he did that. The killings happened too quickly in dark parts of the street in the middle of the night. What happened was when the bodies got back to the morgue, somebody was selling body parts under the table for extra money. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's this, that's why it looks like an expert removed them, because an expert did remove them.
That makes sense.
Perfect.
A lot of sense.
There are a lot of theories that aren't mainstream that make a lot of sense. And that one is one of them to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, Scott, how many, stop me if you're going to cover this. Right. How many of these women had eaten grapes?
Yeah, that's not. If you've seen the movie that I'm going to mention later, they take that. That is something that has been largely discounted as a fact.
Yeah,
they think it was just somebody who was trying to tell the press that he had seen something, and he was a person who sold fruit on the side of the road, and that he had allegedly sold grapes to one of the victims. They kind of take that in from hell and run with it.
I gotcha. Yeah. And the reason I wanted to start this conversation is grapes were very expensive.
Sure. An exotic.
So, right. And so a lot of people wanted to say that it was some very high nobleman doing this because they had eaten grapes, but they haven't eaten.
No, that's they pretty much been discounted.
Yes, that was not a thing.
Not a real thing.
Right.
So the reason that I mentioned this about the theory on the missing body parts was because Kate Eddowes' uterus had been removed. Mm. Her face had been disfigured. Her nose was severed. Her cheeks were slashed. And she had cuts incised into both of her closed eyelids. Mm. A section of her right earlobe was missing. And in the letter that Jack the Ripper wrote, if it was Jack the Ripper, 3 days earlier, that, remember, has not been publicized, he said he was going to snip off one of the victim's ears and leave it as a trophy for the cops.
So why didn't they release this letter?
Because they were afraid it would create too much of a stir.
And a newspaper received this letter?
The Central News Agency, like the equivalent of our Associated Press.
Okay.
Or, you know, the Central News Agency that fed reports to all of the newspapers for them to print.
So do we think that someone actually sent this, or they just created this after the fact.
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
A strip of Kate Edo's bloody blue apron was found within a few minutes at the entrance of a tenement several blocks away from the murder scene. On the wall above that heap of clothing was a chalk inscription that implied that someone of the Jewish persuasion was responsible for the murders. And the cops, fearing that there would be another anti-Semitic backlash in the neighborhood and people storming the streets, they had that erased from the wall before anybody could take a photograph of it. And if you want to jump down that rabbit hole, it's a big one. Google the Goulston Street Graffito, G-O-U-L-S-T-O-N, and jump.
Mm.
And nice knowing you. We're moving along now to the very worst part of this story. 9 days after the double event, this is on November the 9th, 1888, the horribly mutilated and disemboweled body of 25-year-old Irish native Mary Jane Kelly, a beautiful blonde by all accounts, was discovered at around 10:30 that morning, lying on her bed in the tiny room where she lived at 13 Miller's Court on Dorset Street in Whitechapel. Mary's face had been hacked beyond all recognition. Her throat had been cut all the way down to her spine, practically decapitating her. Mary had been split wide open from her breastbone to her rectum, and her body cavity had been emptied of most of its internal organs. Her uterus, kidneys, and one of her breasts had all been removed and placed beneath her head. Other body parts, both interior and exterior, had been removed and then scattered across the bed and around the room. Mary's heart was never recovered.
Now, is this the first victim that was found inside?
That's right.
So he had more time.
That's right.
I guess.
Police were able to determine from ashes found in the fireplace, there were pieces of clothing, other things that had just been jerked out of the room and thrown into the fire because Jack needs light.
To work.
To see
yeah.
what he's doing. Yeah. And the ripperologists and the police will tell you he was probably in there for a couple of hours.
It had to have been.
Yeah. All right, so catch your breath. And we're going to recap quickly what we know so far. What do each of these five murders by Jack the Ripper, I've been saying river in my head all week. Jack the Ripper, what do they have in common? These canonical five. They were all perpetrated at night.
Mm-hmm.
On or close to a weekend, either at the end of the month or the week after the end of the month. The mutilations became increasingly severe as the crimes took place, with the exception of Elizabeth Stride, when perhaps Jack was interrupted, as we discussed. With the others, Jack went from simply killing to removing organs and mutilating the face, to finally, with Mary Jane Kelly, all the previous methods were combined to create the awful image that you can't even imagine. Actually, you can, because you can Google Mary Jane Kelly and you can see the crime scene photo from that tiny little room on Dorset Street.
It's shocking.
One of the many sad distinctions about the murder of Mary Jane Kelly was that her death scene became one of the first crime scene photos ever taken.
Mm.
And you can view it on the internet if you want, but I've seen it and I never want to see it again.
I mean, just from what we've done here, we don't see as many, we're not experts.
Absolutely not.
But we've seen
true words have never
we've
been
seen some crime scene photos.
Yeah.
That one's shocking.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Now, that crime scene photo was just about the only modern investigative technique that the London police used at the time. Of course, there was fingerprint evidence had not, that was still 20 years away, right? DNA evidence, 100 years away. And the crime scenes at the time were cleaned up as soon as the body was removed so that people wouldn't gather and stare, although that didn't stop anybody from gathering and staring.
Also, probably like a sanitation issue.
Sure.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Here's how much London police did not know about investigating crimes at the time. The still open eyes of both Annie Chapman and Mary Jane Kelly were photographed by investigators in the hopes that the killer's image would be seared on their retinas.
Oh, my.
Huh.
Yeah.
It took my mind a minute to even.
That was the belief that people had that where whatever the last thing is that you saw.
It would.
Was seared into your retinas. According to the London police at the time, like we said, Mary Jane Kelly was the fifth and final victim of Jack the Ripper. When those words were written up in a report in 1894 by the head of London's Criminal Investigation Department, he was 100% certain that he was correct. But in the 130 years since that report has been published, few other investigators or reporters or novelists or ripperologists have ever agreed with such certainty. Not only about how many crimes Jack the Ripper committed, but who Jack the Ripper actually was. And before we go any further, let's get one thing clear, team of experts. We have absolutely no idea here at True Crime on Easy Street who Jack the Ripper was.
No idea.
But that shouldn't disqualify us from thinking out loud, right? I mean, that's all everybody else is doing. Right. Shit, we might get lucky. Who knows?
How will we ever know?
Hey, yeah, how will we know? A blind squirrel find a nut every now and then,
every once in a while. A broken clock is right twice a day. So there was, we're going to point you in a couple of directions for the rest of this episode as we wind down and let you make up your own mind. Now, keep in mind this. In the 30s and 40s, there was sort of a lull in the interest in the Jack the Ripper case. For one thing, Europe was at war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had bigger fish to fry. And a lot of the information that was used to write that 1894 report was lost during the war when the Nazis were bombing London during the Blitz. A lot of that burned up.
Now, I'm guessing you'll get there, but do you have your own theory?
I got one.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I've got one. And in 1966, to answer a question that Kelly had a few minutes ago, a monthly true crime magazine titled Crime and Detection identified a journalist named Fred Best as the reporter from the Star who had written and mailed the letter signed Jack the Ripper.
Really?
Yes. So Fred Best was just about the worst journalist I've ever heard of.
I mean, Fred, why? I mean, I know why, but...
Giving a mediocre journalist a bad name, Fred, thanks.
That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Do better, Fred.
Yeah. All right, so with those disclaimers firmly in place, mm-hmm. we are going to toss at you a few of the more popular Jack the Ripper theories.
Okay.
We're going to toss them up in the air.
Let's do it.
If you want to grab one, grab.
All right.
Grab and run.
All right.
So we've talked a lot about conspiracy theories, right? Especially when we did John F. Kennedy back in November of last year. We talked about the Kennedy assassination. Well, there are several conspiracy theories associated with the Jack the Ripper case. And you guys know that I'm not a big fan of conspiracy theories.
Right.
There was no second gunman on the grassy knoll.
We will discuss the government, that later.
The government does not hide the existence of space aliens who come and visit us.
No, they don't hide it. They've released that info.
I'm not buying it. Elvis is not alive. Bigfoot's not a thing. No conspiracy theories.
I'll agree with you on Elvis.
Me too.
Well, it has.
That's
been.
It. That's as far as I agree with everything you just spouted out of your pie hole.
He would be in his early 90s if he were alive today.
Elvis, he lived too hard.
No, Elvis
for that.
Elvis is gone. Yeah. Elvis is no longer with us.
I'm with you on that one. Anyway, two of the most well-known Jack the Ripper conspiracy theories actually involve, wait for it, the British royal family.
I'm not shocked.
One posits that Queen Victoria's official doctor committed the crimes in order to subvert and silence a blackmail plot devised by the five canonical victims. Supposedly, a member of the royal family had spent a little too much time in the company of a prostitute in Whitechapel and got her knocked up, and he or she, the baby, would have been an heir to the British throne.
That's not how heirs work.
Queen Victoria herself was implicated in this theory.
That's funny. You know, the royal family still to this day is no stranger of scandal.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, the eyes of the world are on you. If somebody followed you around 24/7.
I'm looking at you, Prince Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Another conspiracy involves the Freemasons.
Okay. They get brought up in a lot of like.
A lot of
American
conspiracies.
Sure. Conspiracies,
yeah. And so this organization was prevalent and mysterious in England at that time. Mm-hmm. The theory was sort of a way for English commoners to point an accusatory finger at the rich, crusty upper class, which predominated the membership in organizations at the time, like the Freemasons.
Well, somebody's paying these sex workers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Best-selling crime novelist Patricia Cornwell has spent $2 million of her own money in an effort to try and prove that a post-impressionist artist named Walter Sickert was Jack the Ripper. Sickert had a studio in the Whitechapel area and created a series of four paintings in the early 1900s. Together, they are titled The Camden Town Murder. Look it up. It's eerie.
Mm. And she has a whole book on this.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of that book?
Scott, I read it, but case closed, something, Jack the Ripper,
okay,
case
I'll
closed,
look that
something
up.
Like that.
I'll look that up real quickly and tell everybody.
Most Ripperologists do not agree with Patricia Cornwell. There's another theory that the murders were a series of copycat killings by completely different men. And there are people who believe that there was no Jack the Ripper. Rather, it was Jane the Ripper. They believe that the killer was a midwife who had grown weary of birthing babies to the horrors of Whitechapel.
I don't know. Okay, the woman kills people.
What's Patricia Cornwell's book?
It's called Portrait of a Killer.
That's it.
Jack the Ripper, Case Closed.
Yeah.
Okay. Can find it anywhere you find books.
Yes. Yeah. Now, you guys remember our old friend, FBI profiler John Douglas.
Yes. What does he think?
He got involved in this case in 1988 for a British television special that you can watch on YouTube. It's hosted by Peter Ustinov, the late actor. It's very good. I watched it a couple of times. It's very interesting. But it's from 88. So here's what John Douglas, here's his profile of Jack the Ripper. Jack was employed, which would explain why the murders took place at night and on the weekends.
Yep.
He was white, single, working class male in his 20s. All sounds pretty typical for an FBI profile, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had been abused as a child. He
by
had
his
no
mother.
Probably, right? That makes sense. He had no previous police record and no anatomical knowledge. So Douglas wasn't buying the theory that Jack had all of this time and expertise to get these body parts removed. During the two-hour broadcast, Douglas declined to name a specific subject, though in the series there are five suspects mm-hmm. that they approach equally and try to leave an impression on the audience as to who they think it might have been, or let you choose your own impression. Some of the more run-of-the-mill usual suspects of Jack the Ripper by these Ripperologists include doctors, surgeons, barristers, butchers, policemen, fishmongers, and you can throw in a transient or two, or maybe a merchant seaman, or a traveling salesman, or some foreign visitor mm-hmm. who is in England for business or pleasure, or whatever reason, which brings us to our final suspect of the night, although I think that my theory has more than a few holes in it. You guys remember our old friend, Herman Mudgett?
Yes.
H.H. Mm-hmm. Holmes?
Yeah.
H.H. Holmes himself has become a suspect in recent years. The theory goes that Holmes actually began his career as a serial killer on the streets of London 5 years before he built his murder hotel in Chicago.
Hmm.
And perhaps, remember, Holmes built his murder hotel so that he could murder dozens of people in the privacy of his own home and then dispose of the bodies afterwards with no chance of ever being caught. Think about it. Jack's last victim, Mary Jane Kelly, was the only victim, like Katie said, who was killed inside, and it made H.H. Holmes, in this theory, realize, hey, I could spend a lot more time with this horrible hobby that I have if I just built a place to do it that wasn't on the side of the street.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If all of this H.H. Holmes stuff sounds new to you, listeners, that's season 2, episodes 15 and 16. And if you want to watch an 8-part investigative documentary series about H.H. Holmes and this theory about Jack the Ripper, it is available on the History Vault app. It dates from 2017 and is titled American Ripper. And one of the producers of that series is a man named Jeff Mudgett, the great-great-grandson of Herman Mudgett.
So he believes that his
yes.
great-great-grandfather was Jack the Ripper.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, here's an interesting story about how Jeff Mudgett found out about this story. He was 40 years old, sitting around a holiday family dinner. His grandmother had conducted a little genealogy research, and she wanted to surprise everyone with their family tree. Mudgett told USA Today in an article that was written last year that it was quickly obvious to everyone in the room that his grandfather knew this whole fucking story and didn't want anybody else to know it.
Oh.
He knew that his grandfather was Jack the Ripper. Or was H.H. Holmes. not Jack the Ripper. He knew that he was a descendant of Herman Munchak.
Was he in the room when this is going on?
That's what they're looking at, Grandpa, and Grandpa's, you know, got his head buried in his turkey and dressing. Mm. Just fiddling with his potato salad.
So they didn't even know they were related to this.
Nobody except Grandpa.
Oh my gosh.
There are dozens of documentaries about Jack the Ripper, and there are at least a few of them available on every streaming platform. So no matter which one you have access to some of this information. The book that I found most helpful was published in 1999, and it was titled The Mammoth Book of Jack the Ripper. And it was mammoth. Chock full of theories, suspects, propositions about who Saucy Jack, as he is sometimes known, was and how he was not. All right, guys, landing gear down. This is almost over. There is a 2001 film that Kelly and I have already mentioned titled From Hell that stars Johnny Depp as an investigator and Heather Graham as Mary Jane Kelly. Mm. But don't go into that film blind of the established facts of the case. You brought it up about the grapes.
Yeah, it's ultimately a work of fiction.
There are liberties taken and embellishments made with the facts in order to move the story along. So know the facts before you watch it, and you will recognize the fiction when you see it. All right, so as we round third and head for home, I fear that we have either whetted your appetite for Jack the Ripper, or we've told you a gigantic amount more about this true crime than you ever want to know. Either way, we apologize. Because if you thought there was a ton of theories about who killed John F. Kennedy, Jack the Ripper just poked you in the chest with his blood-encrusted finger from all the way across the Atlantic Ocean and growled in a murderous tone, "Hold my room temperature beer."
Well, he's got about 80 years on him, right?
Yeah. Katie.
What?
Hit it.
Nope.
One last thing. As Winston Churchill said in 1939, in reference to the early events in Europe that eventually led to World War II, this true crime tale is a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. To this day, the true identity of Jack the Ripper remains unknown, and it certainly doesn't seem too much to assume that it will always remain that way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think there'll be anything that it just confirms.
Too late.
Yeah.
Too much time has passed.
Too much. Yeah. Scott, that was a great job. Thank you for the history lesson. Thank you for the history lesson. And say something nice about us, guys, on our social media platforms. Go to truecrimeoneasystreet.com. Or email us, truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com.
Awesome. Is that it? Are we done?
We're done.
Good night, everybody.